constitutional law, we are now moving on to the executive powers. We've talked about the judicial powers, and we've talked about the legislative powers, and we just finished the legislative powers with the episode on preemption. Now we're going to move into executive powers, and specifically, whether or not there is implied executive power. That's going to be our first topic of this episode. And then I won't get into foreign affairs today because we only went over one of the cases in class. I'll get into foreign affairs next week and do all the foreign affairs summed up together. But just note that that episode is going to be completely dependent on this episode because all those cases are derived from implied executive powers. So the question is there implied, well, rather, are there implied executive powers? And the case that answers this question is Youngstown Sheet and Tube Co. versus Sawyer. And this is the still seizure case, or at least that's what it's known by. So what happened in this case? Let's give a little bit of background, and then we'll get into the main takeaways. The big background of this case is that during the 1950s, early 1950s, there was going to be a strike. And the steel union workers was going to have a strike, and they were trying to get negotiations with the industry for higher wage increases, and those negotiations fell through, and so the union says, we're going to strike until we get our wage increases. And the president at the time said, well, that's not good. I need the steel manufacturing to be functioning because that's how we're getting all our weapons. And we're in a conflict right now. We want to maintain peace. And so ultimately, the president was like, we need this to continue running. And so he signed an order to seize the steel manufacturers so that they would continue functioning. And the unions in this instance is, they're suing to say, nope, we don't want you to do that. And so we are given several opinions, concurring, dissenting, majority, where we are trying to determine whether or not the executive authority has an implied power to actually do this thing. And the majority opinion, which is interesting, the majority opinion is not considered controlling in this case. But the majority opinion says that there's no implied powers. That's textual. It just says that the Constitution vests certain powers into the executive branch, and the Constitution says what those powers are, and as a result, those are all the powers that are going to be followed. And there are no implied powers in the Constitution, and as a result, there should be no powers given to the executive based off of a constitutional analysis. That's what the majority says. Frankfurter had a concurrence, and he's looking at the history to say, has the executive authority ever utilized this power in the past? The answer is no. And so in this instance, there is no implied executive power. But that does give room for interpretation to allow other implied executive powers. Now, Jackson's concurrence, on the other hand, is considered the controlling opinion in this case. He provides and that implied powers exist, but there are limitations. And so how's this work? Well, he says that presidential power is allowed in three certain categories. The first category is if the president and Congress align in what they're trying to accomplish, well, then the president has the most implied power, meaning Congress is allowing this, so the president can do this. Pretty much that's all that's saying. The second is if Congress is silent. So the president does something, Congress doesn't say anything about it, either good or bad. Well, then we're going to look at the events, the circumstances, and we're going to use that to determine if the president has any implied power. So I kind of think of the second category as Frankfurter's concurring opinion. That's a personal opinion. That might not be accurate, but that's how I kind of picture this, is if Congress is silent, we're just going to look at history, and we're going to look at the events to see if it makes sense to give the president powers in this instance. And then the third category is if the president and Congress do not align. Meaning the president wants to do one thing, and Congress has specifically said you can't do that thing. In those instances, the president has the least power, and his power is only afforded if he has constitutionally vested authority. So this is going to be the most restrictive on presidential authority, and it's going to be, quote, examined with caution. The dissent in this case argues that there should be implied powers, and the implied powers should not be based off of what Congress thinks, because the president is not Congress's messenger boy. And that's another quote from the case. Ultimately, it's just saying president is supposed to be unencumbered, separation of powers by Congress, and as a result, he should be able to do whatever he wants. That's ultimately kind of what the dissent is arguing. The dissent wants this resolution to stand. The other concurring opinions want it to fall. And that's ultimately what happens. And this third opinion, this third concurrence, is ultimately what is governed law today, where we have these three categories, where if the president and Congress align, then president has a lot of power. If Congress is silent, we're going to look at the imperatives of events. And then if president and Congress do not align, we're going to limit the presidential power. And we're going to see Youngstown really come into effect when we talk about foreign affairs in our next, I believe, four cases, maybe even five cases. It depends on what we get into next week. But ultimately, these three categories are governing law, and it shapes presidential powers. Have a good one. Bye. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Law Schoolers. Before I let you go, there are four things I want to say. The first thing is if you enjoyed these episodes and if you enjoyed the website, I would invite you to go and join Law Schoolers Pro, and you can do that by going to lawschoolers.com/join. It's a way for you to support us, but there's also a lot of features there that I think you will enjoy. Second thing is that nearly all of our episodes are unedited. The only ones that aren't are pre-law materials, and the reason for that is so you can actually see the legal material in its raw form as I'm learning it as well. The third thing is that the information contained in these episodes are specifically only for educational purposes. They're not to be used as legal advice. And with that, the fourth thing is if it is used as legal advice, we are not liable. That is, Law Schoolers is not liable for any legal outcomes. Thank you again for enjoying the show. Have a good one.